Version of the Antichrist, so that Christ himself becomes, from their viewpoint, the Antichrist. Unbelievable deception, calling black white, white black, the truth a lie. And the Apostle Paul makes it very plain why so many people will be deceived. And there are two things. One, they do not love the truth. And number two, they take pleasure in unrighteousness. And friend, if you want to be protected against end-time deception, number one, you have to be a lover of the truth from God's viewpoint. That is, from the Bible's viewpoint. Not anybody's viewpoint, but the Bible's viewpoint. Secondly, you have to be a lover of righteousness from God's viewpoint. Not from Allah's viewpoint, not from some other religion's viewpoint, not from the new global government's viewpoint, but from God's viewpoint. What would you say to folk here as we're about ready to wrap up, Joel, concerning this and perhaps also our response toward the growing Muslim phenomenon?
Well, again, I encourage people to begin to structure and order their lives according to the reality that Jesus is coming back soon, that he will rule and reign on the earth, that there is a new world coming, and righteousness will cover the earth, and the knowledge of God will cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. Begin structuring your life according to that reality.
Mm.
Seek first the kingdom of God. Preach the gospel of the kingdom boldly and never give in to fear. Again, Muslims are created in the image of God. They're deceived. Go after them, because the Lord is saving Muslims left and right throughout the Islamic world. The fields are white unto harvest.
Joel, thank you so much for that wrap-up comment. I think I could not have done better myself. You basically echoed the themes that we have been sharing for years here as a result of these programs. And friends, we're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour. Today is no exception. I hope your mind and heart have been strongly gripped today. Get a copy of Joel's book, The Islamic Antichrist. Gift of $22 or more to Save America Ministries will put this hardbound book in your hands. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. Again, become a partner with us. Don't wait for the other guy to do it. He's not doing it, friend. If you value this program in your area, please send your gift to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. God bless you. Be a blessing and pray for those who are falling into Islam.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution, and we're going to get to David just in a moment or two as we begin to talk about the importance of the Constitution and why you need to set up a study group in your community, in your church, in your neighborhood, to begin to teach people about the Constitution. Because, of course, the people of America don't understand the foundational documents of our country. We're going to lose America. And we may lose it anyway because so many people are so busy being busy, but at least there's something you personally can do. Now, before we get to Pastor Whitney, I simply want to talk about the organized, orchestrated effort to lie and deceive the American people. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the head of the NIH that supervised the studies that showed that the swine flu vaccine is safe and effective, has simply lied to the American people. First of all, the vaccine that was tested primarily in the Australian study upon which the release of the vaccines in America was based, they tested a different vaccine. They tested an adjuvanted vaccine. Significant number of the people in the study were already infected before with the virus and were immune to the illness before they ever took the vaccine. So no wonder they got a good antibody response. And, of course, three, possibly four of the seven scientists who wrote the scientific study had strong ties to the vaccine industry that it can make billions of dollars out of this fraudulent epidemic. But even worse than that, Dr. Fauci has said that there were no reactions to this vaccine, and he talked a little bit about the people had a sore arm, a little temperature, totally ignoring the MedImmune, the first vaccine that's going to be released is the MedImmune flu mist, a nasal vaccine. And in children between the ages of 2 years and 4 years of age who received a vaccine, between 6 months and 2 years, 4% of them required hospitalization and 5% of them required the use of bronchodilators because of wheezing in those between 2 years of age and about 5 years of age. 2% required hospitalization and 2% had to be treated for wheezing. And yet Dr. Fauci, who leads the NIH, one of the health officials, who is leading this effort to get people and pregnant women to take the vaccine, simply lied about it. If you read the MedImmune section on pregnant women, they say we cannot, should not be used on pregnant women. There are no studies to show it's safe. I mean, we've read the brochures on all the other IM vaccines that have been released, and none of the vaccine manufacturers say there are any studies that show their vaccine is safe. And yet the CDC is trying to convince every pregnant woman to take a vaccine that contains mercury, and who never knows, heaven only knows what else. Because we don't know what's in those vaccines, but they contain mercury that's toxic to her unborn child, and they know that because it'll do the maximum amount of damage, and they're making pregnant women feel that they're guilty if they don't get it, and we're being lied to. So, with that as a background, this will all be covered in my next newsletter. Not the one that it's September, that this will be the September newsletter, which you'll be getting probably in 3 or 4 weeks. But you need to get the information, and you need to get it out, and you need to warn people that they're lying to the American people. And with that as a background, David, thank you very much for being with me, and forgive me for carrying on.
Oh, not at all, Dr. Stan. What you're talking about really is an illustration of what happens when the federal government gets involved in things it has no business and no constitutional warrant.
Hold that thought. Go right ahead now. We're ready to go.
Okay. What happens when the federal government gets involved in things it has no constitutional power or no constitutional permission to do? In other words, things that are illegal. And NIH is one of those agencies, along with a whole bunch of other alphabet soup agencies, EPA and so on, that are illegal. They're not granted in the Constitution. They're not powers that the federal government has been granted by we the people and by the states to have anything to do with. Well, last time together we were looking at Article 1 and wrapping that up. But before we move on to Article 2, I just want to mention what James Madison said. Every word of the Constitution decides a question between power and liberty, which is why it's so important to read the Constitution in detail, study it in detail, because we need to know exactly what limited delegated powers have been granted to our federal government and what have not been granted to it at all, but reserved to the states or to the people respectively. Well, as we move into Article 2, of course, deals with the executive branch. The executive branch was actually something that did not exist in the Articles of Confederation. Articles of Confederation only had a Congress, and there was no enforcement power of anything that the Congress under the Articles of Confederation came up with. And the executive branch is designed really to be the enforcement power, laws passed through both houses of Congress, signed by the president, we say, into law, and that the executive branch is going to enforce those laws. Section 1 of Article 2 deals with the terms, selection, qualification, and succession for the president. The president serves a four-year term. Originally, there were no term limits, but we'll see in the amendments, ultimately a two-term limit was placed. And the convention originally voted for a two-term limit, but several people noticed that George Washington voted against it. As everyone knew that Washington was most likely to be the first president, they took note that, well, if Washington voted against it, maybe we shouldn't have a limit. And so later in the convention, they eliminated the two-term limit, and our Constitution before amendment had no limit on the president's terms of office. Washington, after serving two terms, announced that that was enough, and that really set a tradition all presidents followed up until Franklin the Wicked Roosevelt himself. And he was elected to four terms and did enormous damage to our constitutional republic. He, in his New Deal and all the other things, was basically turning us into a socialist or a communist country. All of the things that he was doing were highly illegal and unconstitutional, and it's I'm grateful to God that he died at the beginning of his fourth term.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Our guest is Pastor David Whitney, and he's talking about, of course, the idea that originally our Constitution had no limitation on the number of terms that a president could serve, but, of course, eventually after Franklin Delano Roosevelt served, at least was elected to a fourth term, and had done immeasurable harm to our country, and, of course, had taken us into an unnecessary war, because people have forgotten that basically, of course, we were actually funding and helping the Japanese right up till very, very shortly before why we put all the sanctions on them to force them into attacking us. They couldn't buy even oil anywhere in the world. We declared war on Japan because we prevented them purchasing oil. They couldn't survive without oil. And, of course, the United States and corporations had been funding Adolf Hitler and providing the war-making material. And if you haven't read the book, The Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, understand that it was not only before the Second World War that American corporations and banks were helping and funding and building the weapons of war for Adolf Hitler. They were actually doing the same thing during the war, but we can never let the American people know that. And Roosevelt knew it and did nothing to stop it. So anyway, they did pass an amendment then that restricted the number of terms a president could serve. And pick up the story there, David.
Yes, and that is the 22nd Amendment that was ratified in 1951. Now, the also in Section 1 of Article 1 deals with the way in which the president is elected. Now, the popular conception is that we go out and cast our ballot and the votes are counted and the popular majority nationwide is what elects the president. And because so many people have a misunderstanding of the process of the election of the president, there's quite a hue and cry these days to get rid of the Electoral College. And the Electoral College is actually the group of people who elect the president. And in essence, the states choose their electors. Each state has electors equal to the total number of senators and congressmen from that state. And so the smallest state would have three, two senators and one congressman. They would have three electors. Now, electors are normally pledged to support the candidate who carries their state, but sometimes they violate that pledge. They're not absolutely bound to follow that pledge, because our founders had the idea that popular majorities, as they called mobocracies, could be very dangerous. In other words, the mob could be going one way, just like lemmings going over the cliff, and we don't want to go over the cliff, so that wiser and cooler heads might prevail, even if the populace is going one direction, and say, now this is really not a good thing. And one of the debates that I remember reading about and even blogging a bit about myself was perhaps if there were electors who truly understood their duty only to place in office a president who is qualified, and we'll talk about the qualifications in a bit here, that Obama would have never gotten into office. That if they looked at the qualifications and recognized that Obama was not a natural-born citizen and so on, that the Electoral College could have solved a problem that the people created in voting for him in the polling places. Well, so normally they're pledged to, you know, go with the candidate who carried their state. But originally it wasn't even the winner-takes-all design per state. That is, if your state, the majority of people vote for Barack, then all of the electors for that state go to Barack. But no, originally it was per the congressional district of that state. And so your congressional district, whoever takes the majority in your congressional district, the elector for your district in the Electoral College would vote the way that his congressional district went. It wasn't winner take all. And I believe there's two states that still practice that structure, Maine and, I'm guessing it's Michigan, but I'm not absolutely certain of that out in the Midwest. And I think, in my opinion, that's a far better and a far fairer system. For example, in our state here, Maryland, we have what I would call a kind of a cancerous core between Washington, D.C. and Baltimore that's always going to, has the greatest population, is always going to vote for the most leftist candidates. And yet, the far west of our state, as well as the east and the southern part of our state, are far more conservative, and yet they never, in a presidential race, their vote never really gets taken into consideration. But if it was by congressional district, then their vote would have a far greater impact on the outcome of the presidential election. And a president would really have to campaign nationwide rather than just dropping in on the few states that have the most electoral votes, where a winner-take-all scenario means he gets all of those votes. He would have to really reach all of the people. And so the more rural districts of the country would have better representation than they do today, where it's basically the big cities in each state determines which way that state's electoral votes are going to be cast in Electoral College.
And remember, of course, it's the newspaper in those areas that controls the reality of the people, that and the television. So if you own, then control the newspaper and the television stations in a district, chances are the people will vote the way that the owners want.
And that's a, you know, sad thing, but I think many Americans are beginning to wake up that the controlled media is not to be trusted, and we have the Internet to thank for much of that. Well, then the electors cast their votes, but if no candidate receives a majority, then the race actually goes to Congress. And this has happened in the history of our country, where Congress is actually determining who becomes president, unlike the 2000 election, where you could say the Supreme Court really decided who became president. If there's a tie, then as Congress goes, the House would choose the president. Each state and their state delegation would cast only one vote per state in the House, and the majority of that state's delegation, how they voted, would be the way that state would vote. And then the Senate would choose the vice president, again, one vote per senator, and so on. So the Electoral College is really a state check upon federal power. It protects the smaller states, and it gives the states a real way they can control the outcome of the presidential election. They have control directly over who becomes president. That was the design of the Electoral College. Like we discussed in the Article 1, in the Congress, the states have a direct control over the Senate. So here you have the states with a direct control over the Senate, one House of Congress, and a direct control over who becomes president. If you get the idea here that our founders were very, very concerned about restricting federal power and giving great powers to the state to actually be a check upon federal power, you're exactly right. That's the design. That's the DNA of what our Constitution was crafted to be.
And I think it's obvious that the founding fathers knew it would be far harder for the tyrants to control all the individual states than, of course, to control one centralized power in Washington, D.C. And that is what they feared. And if you read Thomas Jefferson, he will tell you that when all power has been taken to Washington, D.C., a little here, a little there, until all power is in Washington, D.C., we will have a government as venal and tyrannical as the one we've just separated from. They foresaw what's happening today because they realized that men are inherently evil, and there have always been men who wanted to centralize power with themselves, and that's exactly where we are today. A small group of people controls our government Democrat or Republican, doesn't make a dime's worth of difference which party's in power. Go right ahead.
Well, that's exactly right. And the design of our founders was actually to prevent that from happening. And it's still there. The DNA of the Constitution is unchanged. The misinterpretation, misapplication, and twisting of the Constitution is what we've experienced to take us to a place where the states are, you know, virtual little subdivisions, cantons or whatever, of the federal government, and the federal government is overpowering all of them. And that's not the design of our founders at all. And if we were to return to that design of our founders, our God-given rights would far be better protected by the state government than they are by the all-centralized power in Washington, D.C. Now, in a election process for the presidential race, when there's only two parties, it's almost certain that one party will receive a majority in the Electoral College of votes. But if you have three or more parties, then it's not so certain. You might have elections that would frequently go to Congress. And I know some people object to that and say, well, that's why we shouldn't really allow third parties a leg up. But I strongly disagree with that. Up until the war to prevent Southern independence, there were many parties in America. Parties rose and fell, the Whigs and the Federalists and so on. And the system was dynamic, and people had an ability to create a new party, even a party that seemed to be popular at one time. It was nicknamed, I guess, the Know-Nothing Party.
Well, because they had the anti-Masonic party there during the election when John Quincy Adams was elected, because people were concerned about the influence of a secret society on our central government. And
they were rightly concerned.
Right.
So I think the multi-party system, not two-party system, but the multi-party system would be far better, particularly as we look at the situation that there's, as you said, not a dime's worth of difference between many Democrats and Republicans. Once they're in office, they just do what the New World Order wants them to do, and they do not protect the rights or even serve the needs of their constituents at all. They just go ahead with the agenda that is destroying our republic and stripping us of our God-given rights. And so the two-party system has become almost, as some have called it, a duopoly. That is, both of them pandering to the public as if there's some great difference between them, when in fact the matter, there's hardly any difference at all. The only difference may be at the speed at which they're taking us towards the socialist wall. One is going at 100 miles an hour and the other is going at 55 miles an hour. So the only debate is when you're going to crash into that wall of socialism which destroys our constitutional republic.
And of course, the idea that the Republicans are pro-life, and of course the Democrats are pro-choice. Ladies and gentlemen, when the Republicans controlled both the House and the Senate and the presidency, they never once tried to undo Roe versus Wade. They could have done it at any time, passed the legislation, put a stipulation on that the Supreme Court couldn't intervene, but they didn't want to, and they didn't do it. And nobody's pointed out the American people. It's all showbiz, ladies and gentlemen. It's all showbiz. Go right ahead, David.
And so that, for that reason, I'd like to see a revival, and I'm glad to see that there are active third-party movements. The Constitution.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine, so Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
The globalist, and I would simply point out that's true. The Trilateral Commission controls the Obama administration as they controlled the first Bush administration, the second Bush administration, Clinton administration, the Reagan administration, the Carter administration. Every president of the United States between 1976 and the year 2008, every president and or vice president of the United States was a member of the Trilateral Commission. There has never been more than 84, 85, or 87, I think at the present time, Americans or people who were members of the North American chapter of the Trilateral Commission. And we talk about all these other organizations, this Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, but nobody wants to talk about the Trilateral Commission, which is really the center of this whole hub of the control that exists today. Now, beyond that, I'm sure there are even powerful spiritual forces influencing the Trilateral Commission, but it is the cadre that controls the Obama administration. Isn't it interesting that nobody will tell you that during that period, 76 to 2008, every president and or vice president came from this little clique, and even Ronald Reagan invited them to the White House for dinner. Isn't that nice? Go right ahead.
Well, the qualifications of a president having a natural-born citizen and age and so forth, very important because, you see, our founders understood you don't want anyone in that position of the executive branch who is has an allegiance or an affinity to something other than true American principles. And quite obvious our president, actually I shouldn't call him our president, the current resident of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue does not hold the American view of law and government. He's a socialist or a communist, whichever term you want to choose, and he does not have our best interests at heart. people talk about Obamacare, that's the wrong term, because Obama does not care for you. He does not care for any American. He cares only for himself and what Trilateral Commission tells him to do. So he's a puppet out there representing interests who are opposed to everything that our founders stood for, opposed to the liberties and freedoms that are secured by our Constitution. Well, in Section 1 of Article 2, the secession is spoken about. If the president has died or if he is alive but unable to fulfill the duties of his office, that's why we have a vice president in place. And the vice president takes office if the president is alive but unable to fulfill duties of office. But if he were to, suppose, for example, he were in a coma, and during that period of when he's in the coma, the vice president would take the power but relinquish the power if the president revived and was again able to fulfill the duties of office. Well, the question arose in the convention, well, what happens if not only the president is incapacitated or has died, but what if the vice president also is incapacitated or died? And then both offices become vacant. Congress, by law, provides for succession. Now, Congress has provided an act in 1886, amended in 1947, 1948, 1965, 1966, 1970, and 77, and 1988. Each time it's been changed, so the final order to which we are at now, that is if both president and vice president were to be incapacitated or die, then it would be the Speaker of the House would be next in line. Following the Speaker of the House would be President pro tempore of the Senate. And then thirdly, the cabinet officers according to the seniority of their departments. That is, the first department that was created by the executive branch would be the next in line. In that case would be the State Department, and oh, Lord help us, it would be Hillary. So anyway, not a very good lineup there, Speaker of the House, President pro tempore of the Senate, and the State Department. But anyway, that would be the lineup if the Vice President also was either dead or incapacitated. Now, the compensation is set that is not to be changed during the time of office, and the oath of office that the President is to take is given to us in the Constitution. He's the only office holder whose exact oath of office is given to us verbatim by the Constitution. All the others, Senate, Congress, judges, and so forth, that's by legislative act that their oaths are determined, but the Constitution itself determined the oath of office for the President of the United States.
And I think the first time in the history of our nation when the Chief Supreme of the United States Supreme Court was administering the oath of office to the president, and he forgot it. And, of course, then they had to redo it in the White House, but they didn't bother to bring a Bible because that really isn't important, or is it? Well, lots of strange things are going on today. How could the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court forget the stipulated oath? Well, David, you go right ahead.
And the ironic thing is, as you were mentioning before, that the Chief Justice was bumbling the oath of office, the word that he jumbled was faithful, that the president's going to faithfully execute the office and be faithful to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. Very ironic that that would be the word he stumbles over, because that's exactly the issue of what we're talking about with the entire Constitution, with the Congress, with the president, with the Supreme Court, with judges, with the entire federal government, faithfully following, faithfully obeying, faithfully executing the Constitution, faithfully preserving, protecting, and defending the Constitution. I dare say 99% of them are doing the exact opposite. They're attacking the Constitution. They're at war against the Constitution. And maybe that's why, maybe maybe the Chief Justice has a little bit of a conscience, and so his conscience made him stumble over the word faithful, because he knows almost nobody in Washington, D.C. is faithful to the Constitution.
I think, you know, what we ought to do is get him a nice sleeve like the quarterbacks have, you know, and the quarterback wears a sleeve and they write all the plays down on there. So you'll see them looking at the plays, and maybe we have to get one of those for Justice Roberts so that he can write down, say, his oath or what he's supposed to say, and he can just glance down at his sleeve. And ladies and gentlemen, he's a brilliant man. There's no question he's brilliant. How could he? Well, maybe it was just a mistake. We all make mistakes. I'm sure I make mistakes, too. But what an embarrassing mistake, if it was a mistake. Go right ahead.
Yes, indeed, if it was a mistake at all. And then, of course, the next day, redoing it just to kind of cover their tracks in case someone would question whether the guy at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue was actually legitimately the president.
But it was so blatant that there was no Bible there to swear on. No Bible. Always every other president has sworn on a Bible, except when they redid the oath, they didn't bother to have a Bible there. But go right ahead.
And the imagery of that is that when you swear an oath on the Bible, and George Washington, actually, most Bibles you see when they're swearing an oath, the Bible is closed. But the pictures we have, the paintings of that, and the witnesses for George Washington's oath-taking, he had an open Bible. And his hand was on a specific page of the open Bible, and the page, the witness told us, was Deuteronomy 27 and 28. When you read Deuteronomy 27 and 28, it's fascinating because it's the list of promises.
Hold that. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We were just talking about the importance of the fact that when President Obama took the oath of the office for the second time in the White House after Justice Roberts had bumbled the oath, when they did it the second time, why, they didn't bother to have a Bible. So the oath really doesn't mean much of anything if it's not sworn on a Bible, and maybe he had his fingers crossed, who knows. But David was simply pointing out that when George Washington took his oath of office, he not only swore on with his hand on a Bible, but on the open pages of the Bible, to verses in Deuteronomy. And what did they say, David?
That's right. The verses of Deuteronomy chapter 27 and 28, is a list of the blessings for a nation that obeys God's law. When a nation obeys God's law, here's the blessings that they will be blessed in the country, they will be blessed in the city, they'll be blessed in their flocks, they'll be blessed in their harvest, they'll be blessed in their children, on and on the list of blessings go. And then, of course, contrary, we're a nation that disobeys God's law, a nation that rebels against God's law, a nation that says murder is okay, go ahead and murder 50 million unborn children, that kind of thing. Here's the curses that will come upon the nation. They'll be cursed in the field, and cursed in the city, and cursed in their home, on and on the list of curses going. And George Washington consciously was saying, I am praying that we will experience God's blessing by obeying God's law, and that I, as president, will see to it that I follow God's law. And I don't believe he did perfectly. I think he made some mistakes as president, but that was in his mind. And that's why he swore on the Bible, specifically the open Bible in that pages. And the same idea is, by swearing on the Bible, and actually by taking an oath at all, you're calling upon God to be a witness to the promise that you're making, because you're making that promise to God. And if you break that promise, you're asking God to bring curses down upon your head, the curses contained in the Bible. And that's why your hand is on the Bible. May these curses come upon me. God, if I disobey this oath, may your blessings come upon me if I obey your oath. And, you know, the Bible is very specific about the serious nature of taking an oath. Let me just read you.
Well, before we do, I want you to go ahead and get out your address of the Institute of the Constitution, your telephone number, your website, why people should contact the Institute of the Constitution and get a course and start teaching this. I mean, it's happening all across America. The last thing the Brotherhood of Darkness, the evil people who run our country, want is for the American people to understand the Constitution. And the reason I have you on is because I want them to understand the Constitution and try to take back our country from the wicked people who control it today, the Brotherhood of Darkness. But go ahead, David.
Amen. And
how can they get in touch with you?
They can either go to our website for Institute on the Constitution, that's IOTConline.com.
Again, our website at Institute on the Constitution is IOTConline.com. And there they can get a host kit right at the top of the page. Click the button for a host kit. And the host kit gives you everything you need to conduct a course teaching other people all that they need to know with a working knowledge of the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, an understanding of our founders' view of law and government, which was a biblical view, and a good handle on what the subsequent amendments entailed, and how do we go from the kind of absolutes, the biblical absolutes our founders worked with in crafting our form of government, to the kind of relativistic humanism that is here today, and what's the path back. And people, like you say, Dr. Stan, all over the country are hosting classes. I was down in Fredericksburg, Virginia, speaking this past Friday night on the Sacred Oath, what we're talking about right here. And in the audience, we had them stand up, all the people in that part of Central Virginia that were hosting a class right now this fall. And there was 8 people all hosting classes in different parts of that section of Central Virginia. Very encouraging, because we see this movement spreading as more and more people are recognizing they can understand the Constitution, they can help their fellow citizens understand the Constitution, and as these grassroots groups grow, we have an ability to take back our country from the wicked pagans who are in control. And so we encourage everybody, get a host kit. You can do this. I was talking with a gal who has never hosted a class before. She's gone through a class once. She's doing it for the first time, and she's excited because she's saying, yes, I can do this. She wasn't very certain at first, but once she got started with it, she realized, yeah, all the materials I need, questions and the student notebook with an outline of the course and the test guides that give the host all the answers to the test questions, and all of it's there to conduct an effective class. So we encourage people to go to our website, IOTConline.com, order a host kit, or look at our web store, because there's many other materials that are available there. If you want to call us by phone and order that way, we're on the East Coast, so during business hours on the East Coast, our toll-free number at Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. That toll-free number again for Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. Well, before we took a little break there, I was going to read what the Scripture has to say about taking oaths. And this is what I spoke about Friday night. We actually just produced a video of that lecture called The Sacred Oath. If people are interested in that, they can actually call us. It's not available on our website yet, but The Sacred Oath. And what the Scripture says very clear in Ecclesiastes 5, you know, when you make a vow to God, which is what an oath is, when you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. Better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin, nor say before the messenger of God that it was an error. Why should God be angry at your excuse and destroy the work of your hands? Pretty serious business, and I was grateful last Friday night that a gal who is running for the State House in Virginia was in the audience, so I noted that she was paying particular attention. She was realizing if she won a seat in the House in the Virginia legislature, she was going to have to take an oath, and this oath was a very serious matter before Almighty God, endangering her eternal soul should she violate that oath and not repent of that violation. And so the oath of the president is spelled out to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. Very, very specific as to what the job of the president is. And as I said to the group on Friday night, of all the hoopla that took place on the day of the inauguration, or what some people like to call the coronation these days, but all the hoopla that went on that day, the most important part of the entire day, actually the most important part of this man's inhabiting of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue was the 25 seconds in which he took that oath. Because that 25 seconds will determine his eternal destiny. It will determine whether he is judged by God in this life and the life to come. He made a solemn oath. I don't believe he's serious about it, because if I am accurate in my understanding, he began to violate that oath within hours of having stated the oath on that inauguration day. Well, then, Section 2 of Article 2 deals with the powers and the duties of the president. He is the commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy, and which involves, of course, the state militias when they are called into federal service. We've stated before, our founders did not countenance ever having a standing army. The army was only to be called up when necessary for invasion, if we were being invaded, there were other insurrections or things that needed to be dealt with that were directly part of protecting the God-given rights of the people, not wars of empire, which is what we've been fighting for the past 100 years. It's been all wars of empire. Not one of the wars in the past 100 years can really be called a defensive war, including the one we're engaged in right now.
And I really, I think I was just reading this evening, and having heard President Obama saying, we have to stay in Afghanistan to break the back of Al-Qaeda. Well, Al-Qaeda has moved its center of operations largely to Yemen. Are we going to go to war with Yemen? I mean, Al-Qaeda has primarily been financed by Saudi Arabia. Maybe we should go to war with Saudi Arabia as well, and because Pakistan's been financing Al-Qaeda and giving them refuge. Maybe we ought to go to war with Pakistan, but maybe we ought to go to war with the people who originally financed Al-Qaeda, which was the American CIA. If you go back and study the background of Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, they were financed by our own government, creating the best enemy money could buy. And, of course, we had to have an excuse to go to war. And it's about time the American people understood why our founding fathers feared a standing army, because they knew it would be used, it would be used for the wrong purposes, and they would lie to the American people about its usefulness. I would just comment that the reason we have to keep our troops in Iraq is because Iraq cannot get the things that they need, the radios, the helicopters, the equipment that they need to have their own army and their own police force. And we won't give them the money. We won't lend them the money to buy the equipment. We won't lend the money so that Iraq can establish its own military and police, because, of course, we want an excuse to stay there. And we can say, well, they don't have the equipment. They can't possibly maintain a country without, you know, the proper equipment. And we absolutely refuse either to give them the equipment or to lend them the money to buy it, so we'll have an excuse to stay. It's like Catch-22, or maybe there's another agenda. But you go right ahead, David.
So the president is only commander-in-chief of the army when there's a declaration of war, and so when the militias of the several states are called into federal service, that's the only time he's a commander-in-chief of the army. Well, the Navy was envisioned as a standing institution because it was necessary to have ships and so forth ready, prepared, and good to go. So the Navy is a little bit different, but the power over the armed forces really was shared between three entities. The states, which control the militias until there is a declaration of war. The president, who is commander-in-chief of the Navy when there is no war, but only commander-in-chief of the Army when the declaration of war has taken place. And then the third entity involved in sharing power over the military is Congress. Congress, you see, makes the basic rules for the armed forces. The Military Code of Justices, Congress has complete control over that. And so there was this great debate in Clinton's regime whether there would be gays in the military, and, you know, Clinton was saying, well, don't ask, don't tell, I'm the commander-in-chief, and I'm, you know, no, he's not. He doesn't get to determine the rules, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. That's Congress's job to determine that. It's not the job of the president. So the concept in our day is that Congress basically doesn't do anything for the military other than fund it. And likewise, the state doesn't do anything regarding the military other than provide cannon fodder of its young men and now young women and so forth. The president is the all in all. No, that's a false understanding of our Constitution. Our founders were very wise. They understood military power is extremely dangerous. They saw what King George III did with those lobster backs, is what they called the redcoats. Those lobster backs were used to abuse them, used to collect taxes, used to break into their houses and search their papers and personal, you know. They saw the abuses of the military under the wicked King George III, and they were not going to separate from King George III and step right back into the same kind of danger of having a military run their country, military on the street acting like police. No way. they would not stand for that, and therefore they wanted the power that the civilian power, military was to always be under civilian power, the civilian power that controlled the military also to be divided, not to be in one hand, not to be in the hands of the president, but the hands of the states under the state governors. And so there's 50 governors then of each of the state militias, and then the president having certain powers, and Congress having certain powers, and Congress powers check the powers of the president, the state's powers check the power of the president. I think the states, if they had governors with some guts to them, could stand up to this tin horn dictator and say, no, we're not allowing any of our National Guard, any of our state militia to be used in a war unless you declare war. If Congress declares war, then our state militias will go in service, but until Congress declares an actual constitutional war, we will not allow any of our young men in our state militia or National Guard to even set foot into the federal army. That would, boy, it'd be really interesting to see a governor of a state taking what really is his responsibility. He's to be a check against the power of a tyrannical federal government when the federal government disobeys the law. That's what the states are supposed to do. As of yet, we haven't seen a governor willing to step forward and do that. We've heard a little bit of rumblings in Montana and some other states, but nothing beyond rumblings at this point. Well, when Congress does declare war, then the president is empowered to give day-to-day orders and more specific details as to how a war is going to be conducted and so forth that are beyond the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So the day-to-day operations would be under the guidance of the president himself. But the states continue to control the militias. The states actually appoint all of the lower officers in their state militias. So the states have a tremendous power over the military through their militias. Now, how in the world, if that's the structure, that's what our founders established, how in the world, what's the excuse that our current Congress has given itself to completely run roughshod over that structure and against all of those barriers to prevent the abuse of the military? Well, a great deal of destruction was done in 1973 with what's called the War Powers Resolution. And this was an attempt to define this sharing of power between the president and the Congress and the governors, basically obliterating those two and giving way too much power to the president. And then the excuse for not declaring war, well, the current one is this. Well, we gave an authorization of use of force, basically giving the president a blank check to do whatever in this war on terror. Excuse me, what's a war on terror? Terror is a tactic of the enemy. Terror is not a country. Terror is not a specific target. Terror is a tactic of the enemy. You know? And so how could you say you go into war on terror unless you want to declare that you're at war with the entire world? Maybe that's what they mean by their war on terror. Everybody in the world that they think might possibly be a terror to them, including American citizens now with things like the Military Commissions Act, they want to declare us terrorists. Say they're at war against us, the very citizens who are seeking to reestablish constitutional government in this land. So we see the real agenda of these evil people is the complete destruction of our constitutional republic and the enslavement of all of us as minions of the New World Order. That's what they're really about, and everything they've done is just an excuse. But they have violated the Constitution, they have violated their oath of office, and on Judgment Day when they stand before God Almighty, as Ecclesiastes says, God's not going to listen to any of their excuses like, oh, I never read the Constitution, or oh, I didn't know what the Constitution meant. No, none of their excuses are going to do. In God's judgment hall, there will be hell to pay for these who have violated their oath of office and violated the very structure of our constitutional republic.
I'm sure you're absolutely right, David. We are in real trouble. People must understand our Constitution. They must understand there's a subversive element in our society that hates the Constitution, is dedicated to globalism, to lowering the living standards of the American people. That's why they've contrived this economic crisis and are going, of course, to continue working until they've destroyed the lives of most and impoverished most Americans. Well, go right ahead, David. You got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, as we look further in Section 2 of Article 2, we see...
heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
We know America is changing, but most of the changes that are taking place seem to be designed to take away our freedom. And what can you do to remedy the current situation? Well, you can become informed, and one of the best ways to become informed is to subscribe to Republic Magazine, because that magazine provides the information that's suppressed in most other news magazines. If you want to oppose the effort to establish a one-world government, if you want to preserve freedom here in the United States and throughout the world, I suggest you subscribe to Republic Magazine, and you can do that by calling 1-800-873-1620. That's 800-873-1620, or access their website at www.republicmagazine.com. That's republicmagazine.com. I suggest you get extra copies for your family and your friends.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.
I am going to set up an Institute of the Constitution in my community, and I'm going to try to do something to try to regain constitutional government rather than allow a group of people who want to establish a dictatorship to run roughshod over the true laws of our country, which is the Constitution, and it's being totally ignored by the subversive elements within Washington, D.C. today. Well, we need weapons to fight the enemy. But I'm not talking about guns. I'm not talking about any sort of violence. I'm talking about ideas. And I'm talking about documents that will help people understand. And certainly one of the best things I know is my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. It's probably in its 8th or 9th or 10th printing now. We've sort of lost track. But we need a new printing. We're just about out of copies. It's been reprinted by Anomalous Press, by Tom Horn, and you can get them through him. The book ordinarily costs, the suggested price is $12.95. But if you would like to help us reprint the book, why, of course, we can give you a case of the book. That's a case of Brotherhood of Darkness, and that will cost you a suggested price of $149.95 plus shipping, $149.95 for 60 copies of the book. It's a little over $2 a copy. And here's something you can get in other people's hands. You can get them to read. They can begin to understand the true nature of the spiritual battle we're involved in. So if you want to do something positive and you're in a position to do it, here's one of the best weapons I know, and believe me, this book has had a profound impact on many people's lives, not because I'm a great writer, but because there's some great poetry in there that's been written by others, some of the greatest poetry ever written. And hopefully it'll help to inspire the readers to become involved in this epic struggle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So if you'd like to get a case, 60 copies of The Brotherhood of Darkness, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We only can take 50 people. We already have about 4 orders so far, and we've only just started yesterday. I think that they'll go fairly quickly. You can get them. You can give them to your friends at Christmas time. You can do whatever you want to with them. You can sell them if you want to. We want to get the information out. We're selling ideas, and you'll be helping us keep the book back in print. So if you'd like to help us, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Now, don't forget, we're having an all-day conference here in the Central Coast of California on the 25th of October, and Tom Horn will be there, Dr. Catherine Albrecht, William Grigg, some of our favorite speakers will be here. We're going to have a great time, and we hope you can come as well. We're going to be serving lunch. You're going to have a reservation. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. And then if you want to understand what's really going on, the dark and secret forces behind the scenes, the same forces that Dan Brown talks about in his book, The Lost Symbol. Now, he's not coming from the same worldview we are, but he recognizes that there are forces out there, supernatural forces, that guide the affairs of men. Why, of course, we hope that you will certainly go ahead and want to listen to my talk on the forbidden secret, my talk on the secret, which is an abridged copy of the forbidden secret, my talk on the financial Armageddon. Those will give you a tremendous background. Of course, you need to hear our talk on Brotherhood of Darkness and or read the book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, then you want to certainly get some of our 4-tape sets, a great new 4-tape set on the swine flu vaccine, 4-tape set on vaccine update 2009, because it is being used to destroy the minds of our children, and you better find out what's going on if you value the lives and minds of your children and grandchildren. And then, of course, pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Danny, and I won't use his last name without his permission, but I didn't ask him ahead of time what he wants to do. I'll be glad to, but Danny is affiliated with the health profession, and he's a good supporter. He's a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and of course, we've know his mother, and they're certainly good patriots concerned about what's going on. But Danny works as in the health field, and so he had an opportunity recently to go to a meeting, and I believe it was probably sponsored by the Centers for Disease Control, and it was aimed at trying to convince healthcare workers that they had to be vaccinated for this terrible, deadly swine flu. Now, you have to understand that, you know, this is really a very minor type of illness. Since the inception of the epidemic, I think up until about the end of August, only 150 healthy people in the entire United States had died of this disease. At least they've proven to be died of the disease. They tell about all the hospitalizations, but there have been less than 2 hospitalizations per hospital in this country. They use all of these exaggerated figures about all the children dying. Only 7 healthy children had died of this disease by the middle of August, and certainly they're talking about all the pregnant women. I think 6 or 7 pregnant women, but we don't know anything about their health. Only 6 or 7 pregnant women in the entire nation, with over 300,000 pregnant women, only 6 or 7 pregnant women have died. But they want them to be vaccinated, despite the fact that the people who manufacture the vaccines, every single one of them, say there are no studies to show this vaccine can be safely given to pregnant women. We know it because it contains mercury. We don't know what else it contains. But we cannot trust them because the government lies. They lie about everything. And there are billions of dollars at stake. The epidemic will be almost over by the time the vaccine is readily available. The vaccine will peak out within the next 2 weeks and then be on the decline. And most Americans will have had the disease and be immune to it for life. And they're going to go ahead and vaccinate them to use up the vaccine. And maybe they have another agenda. Is it to make money for the vaccine manufacturers? Or is it to give maximum doses of mercury to our children and to pregnant women, where it'll do the most danger to the damage to their minds? And we know it does that because we've read the CDC's secret Simpsonwood report that they've tried to suppress, and they're doing everything they can to keep the American people from knowing that there's an organized, orchestrated plan. To destroy the minds of our children. Why do you think it is that when our children graduate from high school, they cannot compete in competitive examinations with children from other countries? Yes, it's poor education, but is there another cause? And yes, I believe there is. Dr. Mark Geyer, who is a friend of ours who deals with these autistic children, feels that almost every child's mind, every child in America, has been damaged by the mercury and the aluminum and in the vaccines and by all the other poisons that we're giving them. And they know what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. Danny, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome. It's great to be here tonight.
Well, we're going to, just as soon as we get back here, we're going to let you begin to tell us a little bit about how you happened to go to the meeting and, of course, what you learned at the meeting. So hang on. We'll be back in just a moment with Danny. And do you want me to use your last name or not?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. Danny Madsen, who works in the health field. And certainly he had the opportunity to attend a meeting that was sponsored. Was that the CDC?
Yes, it was sponsored by the CDC and the Keystone Center.
Hold that thought. We'll go right ahead.
Okay, well, first I'd like to mention that I am actually a specialty electrician, and the company I work for happens to work in hospitals, putting in call light systems, the nurse call systems and paging systems, and I work in government schools. Those are the two places I work at most. We also do some sound systems for universities and so on. So anyway, that's how I'm in the health profession a little bit.
How did you happen to go to this Centers for Disease Control meeting? Because that's something that most people who are electricians wouldn't be going to.
Well, that's true. And I received an email from a friend of mine that was a forward from somebody else, was an invite talking about the CDC meeting and to go to the keystone.org website to sign up for it. So at first, well, I received that on August 18th, and the meeting was August 29th. And at first I was thinking, well, nah, there's no reason to go because it's a government meeting, it's facilitated, you know, they're there to change our mind, they're not going to listen to us. So at first I was thinking, why bother? And then after talking with my mom for a while, she said, well, you know, you might as well go, maybe you'll meet somebody, or, you know, meet some, get some new contacts. And I'm glad I listened to her. So, but anyway.
Well, your mom's pretty smart. She's been around a long time, so go ahead.
Yeah, she is smart. Mothers are great, too. Anyway, so I decided, I signed up just a couple of days before the meeting and was able to get in. Apparently, they were expecting over 100 to show up, but only 86 people showed up for that. And I get there, and of course, it's facilitated, so you're divided up into groups immediately. And so I sit down at my table. The only one, I went a little bit early, so the only one there is the facilitator there. And I get to talking with her, a real nice gal. But this is what I couldn't believe. See, I'd never experienced a full-fledged facilitated government meeting before, until then. So it was quite the experience. Even though I've listened to your show and know about the facilitation process, it's something altogether to experience it. Anyway, she was bragging about the fact that she was a trained facilitator.
Yeah, she actually told you she was a facilitator.
Oh, yeah, she was all proud of it. She had gone to school to be a facilitator.
And did she explain to you what a facilitator does and how they are there to alter the reality of the people who are attending the meeting?
No, she didn't say that.
All right, hold on for just a moment. We'll be right back with Danny Madsen. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Danny works in the electrical field, but he isn't out of hospitals, working in other ancillary organizations. But somebody told him about this meeting, the Centers for Disease Control meeting on the H1N1 vaccine. And so he decided he'd go, you know. Suddenly he wanted to find out what was going to go on there. And so there were supposed to be 100 meeting people at this meeting, sponsored by the Centers for Disease Control through one of their front organizations. They're desperate to get healthcare workers to take the vaccine because most healthcare workers are a lot smarter than most people, and most healthcare workers aren't going to take the vaccine because they don't trust it, they don't know that it's safe, they don't know it's effective, and they've seen the terrible consequences, the paralysis, all the tragedies that come with the use of vaccines, and they know that some people die from vaccines, and some of them get Guillain-Barré disease and are paralyzed for life, and they don't trust vaccines. Most physicians and nurses do not take the regular vaccine. They're certainly not going to take the swine flu vaccine. So Danny goes to the meeting, and of course they bring in a facilitator. A facilitator is somebody who's there, trained to alter the reality of the people. And he gets there, and there's a very nice lady who announced that she's been trained as a facilitator. And so what did she actually tell you?
Well, she just started talking about her background, where she's from. She was originally from Jamaica and moved up to New York. And she started explaining some of her jobs, which I can't quite remember now. But it was the one time at the meeting I'm thinking, oh, great, I'm right in the middle of things here. Because the things that she was saying and how proud she was of being a trained facilitator. Now, this, of course, was just the table facilitator. Every table, and there were 8 tables, I think. Every table had their own facilitator, and then, of course, you had the main facilitator in charge of the group.
Well, of course, all of this, the purpose of these meetings is to change your reality, to change the way you look at things. And, of course, these people know how to manipulate the public. I mean, this is how most meetings are held. They're facilitated meetings. They don't want democracy. They don't want your input, although they want to convince you they want your input. But, of course, they have a preconceived outcome for the meetings. These are standard techniques used all across the country to alter the reality of the American people and get them to go along with the agenda of our invisible government. So anyway, at every table now, there are 8 tables, with each one with a facilitator, and then a central facilitator. Is that how it worked?
Yes, yeah. And getting to who was actually hosting the meeting and who hired the local facilitators, was a group called the Keystone Center. And if you go to their website, just a quick search through the website, you'll see that it's just a professional facilitation group. If somebody wants a major meeting facilitated, they hire these guys, and they come in and run the show for you. Tonight, I did a little more digging and went to their Board of Trustees website, and it reads like a who's who of the corporate world. You've got Dow Chemical Company, DuPont, GE, Merck Institute for Science Education. You have somebody from Monsanto on the executive committee. And here's one that really caught my eye, and it was Mr. David Girard, I think that's the right way to pronounce it, from the Rockefeller Foundation.
Oh, all the usual suspects, in fact, the Rockefeller Foundation, Monsanto, they're behind the storing of the seeds up above the Arctic Circle, the seeds for wheat and corn and all the other things, so they'll have good seeds that will be available when they've destroyed all of our food, natural food supplies, and most of the people, and they start in all over again. That's why William Gates, Bill Gates, is this. But the other people we associate with that movement are the Rockefeller Foundation and Monsanto. So go right ahead.
Okay. Well, before the meeting began, as people were coming in, there was only one other person there that I knew, and I only met him 6 days before. And unbelievably, he was seated at my table. And I knew that he had made up a 9-page handout. He had made a few copies so he could hand out to people. And as other people started sitting down, you know, we were talking before the meeting, and we're finding out, okay, well, that's a person that doesn't want a vaccine. That's a person that's in the know. I mean,
you mean everybody else, would you say the majority of the people were against the vaccine?
At my table.
All right.
Okay. In fact, everybody originally at the table where I was sitting was against the vaccine. And then we wanted to hand out information to each other, and somebody, being polite, asked the facilitator if it was okay, and the facilitator immediately said, no, you can't hand out any information, which really started an uproar at the table. You know, what's going on here? Why can't we do that? You know, this is a public meeting. So the facilitator got up, and I thought that she was just going to go ask if it was okay to hand out the information to everybody. But there was another gal sitting across from me that was watching what was going on. Anyway, when the facilitator came back, there were two other gals with her posing as participants, you know, just people who signed up for the meeting. Now, they could have been, but I'm with this gal that was watching this, and saying that they probably were not. They were probably shills just posing as participants.
Boy, they're going to a lot of trouble to try to convince a few people that vaccinating healthcare workers is a good thing, aren't they? It must cost a lot of money for 60 or 70 people they're trying to convince?
Yeah, 86 people that showed up, and there were probably a couple of dozen workers there between the CDC and the Keystone Center and local health officials there.
American tax dollars at work. Go ahead.
Right. So anyway, these two gals were seated, and the facilitator was just saying, you know, they didn't have any other table to go to. Well, it was assigned seating. That should have been my first clue. I didn't catch on until I talked to this gal later. You know, that is one of the tactics. So, but anyway, during our small group discussion, those were the only two people that were for vaccinations. So that kind of cinched the story there, that they were more than likely brought over because the facilitator said, well, I got a hot table here. I need some help.
Okay.
So anyway, so the meeting started, and they had the normal intro, and then they had the Dr. Maxine Hayes, the health officer for Washington State, started speaking first. And, of course, she is, here, I got my notes here. One of the first things she's talking about is seasonal flu kills 36,000 people every year. That number keeps coming back all
because
the time.
Because that isn't true. I mean, about maybe 1,500, 2,000 almost at the most. All the rest of them are pneumonia, and they know that. They're bacterial pneumonias. But they keep using that figure over and over again. It doesn't matter how ridiculous it is. If you repeat it often enough, most people will repeat it, and it's a lie. They lump together bacterial pneumonia and influenza. But go right ahead.
Okay. And that's the only number they can keep repeating, and it's a mantra to them. But anyway, another thing she was saying, and I've got all this recorded, and I've got the audio files on my website that my friend and I just put it together this weekend, so it's kind of bare. It's just a bare-bones type of site. But anybody can go there and download these audios if they're interested. One of the things that Maxine Hayes said was that we do have some priorities of people who are first in line to get it, and those individuals include pregnant women and children and healthcare workers.
How young were they going to start vaccinating the children?
That was never stated at the meeting.
All right.
They just said all-encompassing children. But, of course, if they're vaccinating pregnant women, I mean, what's to stop them from, you know, a couple of days old?
Well, basically what they're advocating is children from 6 months of age to, right on up from there. But they don't want to get one. They got to get two vaccines, seasonal flu, and two, of course, of the H1N1. Give them four times as much mercury, but go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and I've been doing some digging on that, too. So anyway, and she was talking about who will get this, and also went on that every year lots of people choose not to get the flu vaccine, and that is not a good choice. So she, like you were just saying, trying to get everybody to not only get the swine flu vaccine, but the seasonal flu vaccine as well. So she does her intro, and then Dr. Jay Butler, who is the head of the CDC's H1N1 vaccine task force, started speaking. And the first thing he does is start down a scare tactic as far as he asks everybody, who in here are grandparents? And so he says that this H1N1, you know, doesn't really attack the older people as much as it does the younger people.
The children,
yeah.
The children. We're so concerned about children that they use that to play on our emotions, whereas they're the ones who are intentionally harming children, and they know they're harming children, and they're doing it, at least some of them, intentionally. But go ahead.
Yeah, exactly right. And over again, they kept saying that. He also was mentioning flu is a killer. You know, we can't forget about that. Flu is a killer. It kills 36,000 people every year. So, you know, even he was saying talking about that mantra, saying that number again. So anyway, then we went to a question and answer routine, which, again, the gal that was sitting across from me, she knew all these tactics. And the question and answer session is another gauge of where all the dissenters are at.
And so they want to pick out the dissenters so they can isolate them, demonize them, marginalize them, so they won't be effective on the group. And so that's standard technique with the facilitators. And they know it's all calculated ahead of time. It's all planned ahead of time. The facilitators are trained to control the group and then, of course, to manipulate them into believing whatever they want, unless, of course, there are people like Danny there who really know what it's about. We're going to be back in just a moment with Danny Madsen. We'll pick up the story, Danny.
Okay, well, during the question...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
The H1N1 swine flu vaccine, when it becomes available, of course, initially it'll only be for children, because we love the children, and then for certainly the pregnant women and healthcare workers, and then when it becomes available, well, we're going to vaccinate everybody up to 64 years of age, because, of course, we want to save lives, and, of course, that's a lie. They know the vaccine isn't necessary. Why do they know that? Because the vaccine is on, the epidemic is peaking out the next week and the week after that. And by mid-October, when the vaccine becomes readily available, the majority of the people in the United States will have contracted the disease and be immune to it. And we have the articles out of the New York Times saying exactly that. The vaccine's got to get here too late. What do you do with 230 million doses of vaccine that you've ordered and you don't need? Why, you talk the people into taking it anyway, even if it's not needed, because you can't admit to that. And of course, if you want to destroy the minds of children, you give two doses to the infants and small children, two doses of the regular seasonal influenza vaccine, and then two doses of the H1N1 vaccine. They get four doses of mercury. They know they're toxic. We know they know they're toxic because we've read their secret discussions there at Simpson Wood. But, of course, they've done everything they could to conceal the truth from the American people, even into putting up a phony article under Wikipedia up on the Internet. But you need to get the information, ladies and gentlemen, because we've got Simpson Wood. They tried to suppress it, but we've got it, and it's available through Radio Liberty. Or you can get it on the Internet. Or read Dr. Blaylock's excellent summary of it. And in fact, Dr. Geyer, you know, they actually worked with the congressional committee that got the CDC's emails and things that they talked about. We're lying to the public. How are we going to keep the public from not lying? How much can we lie to the public? We can't let them know that we've damaged the minds of all those children. We've damaged them for life, and they know what they're doing, and they do not care. But go right ahead, Danny.
Okay. Another thing that was brought up about thimerosal to Dr. Butler, he started talking about how much of the vaccines would be or would have thimerosal in it. Now, when I was at the meeting, I thought I heard him say 2/3 would have. Would be in the multi-dose vial.
That's what they said, 2/3.
Right. But going through the tapes that I have, I heard him say 1/3, and it was kind of unclear.
No, a third is supposed to be an individual syringes and a thimerosal-free, but can we believe anything they say? I mean, time after time they put things into the vaccines. They put the material into the vaccines that were given in third world countries that were aimed to destroy the fertility of women, a chorionic gonadotropin. Certainly we know that they put squalene into the experimental vaccines that they gave to our troops during the Gulf War, so-called vaccine A, that precipitated an autoimmune disease and destroyed the lives of several hundred thousand of our troops. And in fact, recently, Baxter was going to actually give influenza vaccine that contained the deadly avian flu virus. And of course, fortunately, the Czechs picked it up. Well, they would have killed millions of people in Europe. And now the H1N1 vaccine given over there is going to contain squalene and nanoparticles, and I think an awful lot of Europeans are going to die. How do they know they're not going to kill the Americans as well, when there really are people who want to eliminate most of the population of the Earth? Ted Turner's talked about getting the population down to 200 million. He's relented and said maybe we ought to let a million live. And certainly they had a big meeting in New York, and in June, the billionaires got together on population control. You can read the story on the Internet. And there were the Rockefellers and the Gates and the Warren Buffetts and the Ted Turners and the Oprah Winfreys and all of the usual suspects, George Soros, talking about, well, population control and, of course, public spending to help the children. Well, why do you think Bill Gates, who's dedicated to the population control, is financing the vaccine programs throughout the world to save the lives of little children? If you want to have population control and get rid of the large parts of the population, why would you be trying to save the lives of little children? Well, they have another agenda. That's why you need to hear Dr. David Ayoub's excellent presentation. It's available from Radio Liberty along with a CD-ROM with well over 1,000 pages of documents, government documents, showing they know they're destroying the lives of our children. We'll be right back with Danny Matson.
From the mountain to the prairie, to the
Well, our guest today is, of course, Danny Batson. We're talking about the facilitated CDC meeting. Of course, these are being held at great expense all across the country. They're desperate to try to get healthcare workers and those associated with the healthcare field to be willing to take the vaccine, because how are you going to get millions of Americans to take a vaccine that healthcare workers don't trust? They don't believe it's safe, they don't believe it's effective, and they're absolutely right. We'll be right back. Yeah, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Danny Madsen. And Danny, before I go on, do you want to get your website out so people can listen to your tapes and the information you got there at the meeting?
Sure. It is very simple. It's DannyMadsen.info, DannyMatson.info. And on there, like I said, we just threw this together, so it's really basic. There you can see a link to the summary of the CDC meeting that I put up here. And then from there, there's another link to where all the audios are at, plus an outline that I did for the meeting, for the tapes. So that if you're reading through the outline, there'll be a timeline of, such and such was said or talked about. You can go right to that point on the tape and listen to that.
All right, Danny, will you pick up the story there anyway? So up there, they're telling you about 36,000 people die every year of influenza, which, of course, in itself is a lie. Dying is a lie. But anyway, and then they tell you about thimerosal, but they never tell you that, it was so toxic they outlawed it. It's no longer allowed to be available to put on the skin, but it's perfectly all right to go ahead and inject it to our children. Known toxic doses of it. So pick up the story there.
Right. We were talking about two-thirds of the doses will be in a multi-dose vial. I just recently ran across an article from the Washington State Department of Health that says there will be only about 15% of the swine flu vaccine will be mercury-free. So that's even more mercury in the shot, more mercury-laden shots than what Dr. Butler was talking about. And speaking of that, the reason why I ran across that 15% was apparently as of July 1st, 2007, Washington State had a law that required pregnant women and children under three be given vaccines that have no more than 0.5 micrograms of mercury per half milliliter dose. Well, that law has been suspended. Mercury limits suspended for H1N1 vaccine to improve access. We have to give, since there's going to be so limited in the mercury-free vaccine, we have to make sure that the vaccine's available for everybody. So they had to suspend the law so they can give the mercury shots to pregnant women.
And, of course, that's just one of it'll do the most maximum damage to the brain of their children during the early, rapid-growing stage. Mercury is so toxic to the brain, and they know that, and yet they're going to go ahead and do it anyway. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. And while we're on that topic, off the CDC website, there's a frequently asked question page that I ran across. It says, is the 2009 H1N1 influenza vaccine safe for pregnant women? Answer, influenza vaccines have not been shown to cause harm to a pregnant woman or her baby.
They've not been proven safe. In fact,
right.
Every one of the vaccine manufacturers said there are no studies that show it's safe. They say evidence that shows harm. It should be, is there any evidence it's safe? And, of course, there is absolutely no evidence it's safe. And every one of the vaccine manufacturers, I've read the brochure, says there is no evidence it's safe. But go ahead.
Yeah, I printed one of those out, and I've got links to the swine flu vaccine, the inserts for three of the manufacturers plus the nasal version up on my website. So you can click on those and it'll take you over to the FDA approved vaccine and to the PDF file for those vaccine inserts. And, I mean, right there in the vaccine insert, which up until just recently I hadn't even read, animal reproduction studies have not been conducted with influenza A monovalent vaccine or Fluzone vaccine. This happens to be the Sanofi Pasteur version. And it is also not known whether these vaccines can cause fetal harm when administered to a pregnant woman or can affect reproduction capacity.
But you see, they don't care.
They
do not care. And they know that mercury is toxic to the brain of a developing child. That is what's so criminal about this whole thing. And these people should be on trial and should be prosecuted and, I believe, imprisoned or perhaps worse for what they've done to the minds of our children. But go ahead.
Right. Well, anyway, back to the meeting. After the question and answer routine, there was a bit of a break, so obviously they could figure out which groups they wanted to take out and separate away from everybody. And when they came back, and I'm glad I got this on recording, it wasn't Butler, it was the other facilitator, which I didn't catch the guy's name. He said that we have identified, and he used the word identified, three groups, three tables. To leave, because it's going to get so noisy in this main area with everybody discussing things, so we have to have three groups leave. And he used the term identified. And, of course, guess who was in one of the groups that was identified? So we had the privilege of being put into the noisiest area of the building, out into the foyer area, where they had the hot machines, the snack bar and so on. That was another thing. There was lunch brought in for everybody, so that was another expense. So anyway, out there in that area where everybody was coming and going and all this noise, and so you couldn't really talk to each other. And it was done on purpose for that. So during that part, that of course is where everybody can really vent, but none of it really gets to back into the main group. You have the facilitators that are making notes, and they give a summary after the small group discussion. But that's where Dr. Maxine Hayes came over, because we were talking about just a second here, I got my notes here. We were talking about mercury in the shots, and she started talking about there's no clinical proof that says mercury causes autism. And so on the tapes you'll hear where I get a bit upset. I couldn't handle it anymore at that point in time, and I just asked her, how can you as a doctor possibly even consider injecting mercury into a child? I mean, it's a known neurotoxin. How can you do that? And she just reiterated her mantra that there's no proof that it causes autism.
Did you ask her about the Simpsonwood report? But I know you probably didn't even think of that. It takes a long time to get all the facts down. How about Simpsonwood? How about the findings at the secret Simpsonwood CDC report? Are you aware of that? Are you acquainted with it? But I'm sure she is, and the last thing they want is to tell the American people the truth. Did you ask anybody ask them why we have so many children who have mental problems with ADD and ADHD and autism? Why we have so much dementia in the elderly in this country? Why we have so many children with neurodevelopmental abnormalities? One in every six American children has either a learning disability or neurodevelopmental abnormality. We don't see that in other children. Those are the questions. Well, next time, I'm sure you're going to ask those. Did anybody question any of these things? And what happened next?
Well, actually, in that small group discussion, somebody did bring up the Simpsonwood document, and she was very adamant. She was well-versed about it. But, of course, that wasn't brought up. She was probably like me, as having a problem with large groups, so she didn't bring it up in the large group portion of it. But she did bring it up in the small group. But another thing that also happened there in the small group, as the discussion was going around, most of us are saying, hey, how about a fourth option here of no vaccines? Because the whole CDC meeting was to say, do we go slow, do we go moderate, or do we go full throttle with a vaccine campaign? And so that's what you were supposed to choose, one of those three choices. Well, if you don't want a vaccine, then you don't have a choice at all. And then that's, of course, the whole part of the facilitation process is so that they can come back and say, hey, look, all these people were in favor of vaccines. Even though there was a whole bunch that didn't want vaccines, they weren't going to count you because, well, if you didn't vote, you didn't vote. You weren't counted.
Well, now, what was your feeling about, you know, do you think the majority of the people there were against the vaccine?
That's the feeling I get, but of course most of that was stemming from the table I was at. However, I do know that we had a meeting after the meeting with a bunch of people that were against the vaccine. So there were quite a few there that were not wanting the vaccine. And some of that comes out in their own preliminary summary of what the Keystone Center has a preliminary draft on their website. And they said that there were 86 people that participated in that, and in their electronic polling, yes, electronic polling, not even paper ballots, they had 71 that voted for either the go easy, moderate effort, or full throttle. So there's at least 15 people out of the 86 that didn't vote, more than likely, like me, because it's the only way that I could even potentially say that I didn't want vaccines. Even though they had this lady came over in a small group time frame and said that, and again, this is on the recording, the only choices that they will accept is 1, 2, or 3, you know, the go easy, moderate, or full throttle. And that, you know, she also reiterated that there is a vaccination program. So no vaccine is not an option.
Well, of course it's an option. It's an option for every individual. That they should know they should have that option, and that the epidemic is going to be over before the vaccine is available. That is the most important thing, and nobody's telling the American public that.
That's right. It's just unbelievable.
It's like we live in Alice in Wonderland, you know, and the Mad Hatter's in charge.
That's true. That's true. So anyway, the small group discussion ended, and then the individual facilitators gave their summaries of the small groups. And I was actually surprised by our facilitator. She brought up some of the things. She didn't bring up Simpsonwood, but some of the things that were stated there she did bring up. So we were all kind of surprised at that. But again, it's a 5-minute summary of what was discussed in a small group. So again, part of the facilitation process, the whole group doesn't hear everybody's ideas and concerns. So then, that was basically the end of the meeting. And, at the end of the meeting, you were handed this card to fill out so that you can get your $50 stipend. Yes, here's some more money being spent.
They gave you $50 for going to a meeting with a free lunch?
That's right.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, they called it a stipend. Now, here's one thing. I did not take it. I did not fill out the card. I didn't take it because I was feeling like that was a bribe, and it's blood money. I couldn't morally accept that. So I didn't take that. So I don't even know if this 86 participants is accurate. It may be 87 because maybe they didn't count me. So anyway, then after that meeting, then we had a meeting after the meeting, which is where I'm finally starting to get plugged into a group up here that is politically active, which is something I was wanting. And as the old saying goes, be careful what you want. You may, you know, because you may get it.
Right.
And the leader of one of these of this group that I'm kind of getting plugged in at, he said, "Well, there's no Republican precinct committee officer in your precinct. You want to be one?" So here we go. I'm going to start getting more involved in politics up here. And they've had it was a Campaign for Liberty group that I got that I'm getting involved in, and they also had it was 2 weeks after the CDC meeting, they had their own vaccine meeting, just vaccines in general. And that is another set of audio recordings that I do have on the website. So all of those are up there if you want to hear those. And they had two main speakers there. One of them was a naturopath, and the other one was a young guy who was a Harvard graduate in bioengineering. It wasn't bioengineering. I can't remember exactly what it was, but he was very well versed in studies and what to look for, and had a whole bunch of good information. So those are worthwhile downloading as well and listening to. And I have to apologize for the audio because it's just a little recorder that I have that I just put out there on the chair to pick up the audio. You can hear it. You kind of have to adjust the settings just a little bit, but you can hear everything.
Well, anyway, I really appreciate your going to those meetings, and I believe that there are people all across America that basically are concerned, growing concern, and I think this is such an important subject, and that the things that we should mention. Somebody just called in that Bill Soddy claims that resveratrol will actually prevent infection. It certainly is a very effective thing. The things that everyone out there in the listening audience should know is that certainly if you want to avoid the influenza, why certainly you should be taking substantial doses of vitamin D3 because it boosts your immune system. And if you start to come down with the infection, we suggest you take certainly the vitamin D3. You can take up to 5,000 units every 4 hours for a day or two and not get into any problems at all, but you boost your immune response. And now products puts out something called Alibiotic. It's simply oil of oregano, garlic, and oil of elderberry and one or two other items. You can get them separately, or you can get those through Radio Liberty or get them in any health food store. And then, of course, resveratrol. And resveratrol helps to block the viral infection. And they know these things. But, of course, what are they telling you? Cough into your sleeve, wash your hands. Now, there's nothing wrong with those things, but wouldn't it be much more logical to try to build up your immune response so you didn't get the disease? But they're not going to do that. Why? Because they want an excuse to vaccinate our population, and they want to give children, starting at 6 months of age, two of the H1N1 flu shots, and two of the seasonal flu shots, four shots of mercury that they know is toxic, along with all of their other vaccines, and they know they're damaging the minds of our children. And there is an agenda. And so you only have to read Bertrand Russell's classic book, The Impact of Society, Impact of Science on Society, where he talks about how this wonderful scientific society, utopian society, is going to come back. And by the use of diet, injections or injunctions, they will be able to control the minds of our children. That's on page 50, and we'll be glad to send you the page if you want it. By diet, injections or injunctions, what's in the diet? Well, of course, there's fluoridated water which contains fluoride and mercury and increases the levels of lead, and then, of course, the aspartame and the MSG and the insecticides. That's one reason to outlaw DDT, so you give poison insecticides, all of them act on the brain. Little wonder so many of our children have serious problems.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, you know, America is changing, but most of the changes that are taking place seem to be designed to take away our freedom. And what can you do to remedy the current situation? Well, you can become informed, and one of the best ways to become informed is to subscribe to Republic Magazine, because that magazine provides the information that's suppressed in most other news magazines. If you want to oppose the effort to establish a one-world government, if you want to preserve freedom here in the United States and throughout the world, I suggest you subscribe to Republic Magazine, and you can do that by calling 1-800-873-1620. That's 800-873-1620, or access their website at www.republicmagazine.com. That's republicmagazine.com. I suggest you get extra copies for your family and your friends.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
Information, and I really think it's important that you start taking a vitamin D3 and antibiotic and resveratrol and other things to boost your immune response, especially at this time of year. Avoid sugar, and of course, but that's a entirely different subject. We ought to be trying to avoid the infection rather than taking dangerous vaccines, because vaccines are dangerous to your health. And if you come to our conference, I'm planning on giving a talk on vaccines to give you the information that you need to get out, to others about how they're damaging the minds of our children. We're all-day conference on the 25th of October. It's going to be a great conference. Hope you can make it. You're going to have reservations. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you'd like to become effective in this battle, you have to have the ammunition, you have to have the weapons, and one of the best weapons I know is my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and we're offering a case of those, basically a full case, and for a suggested gift of $149.95 plus shipping. And, of course, you'll get 60 copies of the book. That's a little over $2 a copy, or at the other is $12.95. We have to get 50 orders in, and we'll go ahead and print the book. You won't get them until the cases are, we have enough people so that we can do the printing. But if you'd like to have the book and get it out to your friends, so they can understand the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Now, we have a great 4-CD set on the swine flu vaccine. That's the swine flu vaccine. We have a 4-tape set on vaccine update 2009. We have two excellent DVDs. The first is Dr. David Aub, Mercury Autism and the Global Vaccine Program. Mercury Autism and the Global Vaccine Program, which includes, along with the DVD, a CD-ROM that has, well over 1,000 pages of government documents and scientific studies that show the dangers of thimerosal. And then, of course, we have the excellent DVD by Dr. Russ Blaylock, his talk last year, on vaccines and brain development, because the inflammation produced by the vaccines does permanent damage to the brain. And, of course, the more vaccines you have, the more damage to the brain. Why would you want to keep insulting the brain and destroying the brains of our children? Would there be anybody who would actually ever advocate destroying the brains of our children? Well, Bertrand Russell did in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, on page 150. and you can actually get that page if you get our article, pardon me, our syllabus on the hidden agenda in my talk. It's all on fluoride, but Bertrand Russell said by diet injections and injunctions, why the government will be able to control the minds of the children. They will, by diet injections or injunctions. How are they going to do it? By diet? Why are they going to put fluoride in the water, and they're going to put all sorts of poisons, lead in the water, and they're going to certainly put insecticides in the water, and we're going to ingest MSG and aspartame and pesticides, and then, of course, we're going to give children injections with aluminum and with mercury. And they know what they're doing. That's criminal activity. But, of course, the average individual can't believe anything could be that evil. You need to get our talks on population control, planned population reduction, Nundercollage genocide, and population control. Go to our website and read my monograph on the population control agenda, or if you get anything, just ask for a free copy. And then, of course, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. And then pray for America, pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.
From the mountain to the prairie, to the ocean wide with foam, God bless America, my home sweet home.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Tuesday edition of the Power Hour. This is the 29th of September, 2009. Thank you for joining us today. Wherever you are around the world, thank you, thank you, thank you for caring about your world outside of what they want you to think about, which, of course, is, well, we don't even need to talk about those stories. But there's a lot of diversionary stories in the news that simply keep people away from what's really happening. And I think what's really happening right now is the financial structure of the world is collapsing. No doubt about it. Without some, I think, rebalancing taking place very shortly, we are going to be in the midst of financial shambles. Or it's going to be a two-tier system. The elite who control all the worker bees. And why do I say that? Well, it's not getting any better from the standpoint of what the president is doing. And, of course, now he's going to be going to Europe to try and plead for the Olympics in Chicago. Oh, it couldn't be that he's paying back some people in his hometown of Chicago, could it? Do we have other things that he needs to be working on right now besides the Olympics? Do we even need to be worried about the Olympics? How about just canceling the Olympics for a while? What a concept. Cancel all that incredible amount of money that's allocated toward showing off your sports in your country and getting the world's problems straightened out. But I don't think that's going to be an option, though. It's still all a matter of show. And when you're watching television, the story this morning about Mullah Abdullah Zahir, now this is the real bad guy now in the Taliban. We're going to talk about that because I went back and got a State Department document in 1991 that shows the terrorist of 91, where the State Department knew the terrorists were, and I think you'll find it quite revealing. If you saw Larry King last night, you saw the cartoon character of the president of Libya last night, not even able to stay awake. It appeared on the interview. It was a nothing interview of a world leader. This man looked like he was drugged. If any of you saw that, I think you know what I'm talking about. He literally looked drugged. His eyes were at half-mast. He wasn't even functioning, it appeared, as what he was saying. And, of course, his interpreter took care of what it was that we were supposed to know about. Facebook evidently has a new section on it, in which the FBI is looking at, called Should Obama Be Killed? Now, I don't know about you, but I don't...